handle the truth.
Should we or should we not follow the advice of the galactically stupid?
Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe fuck yourself.
You are a bunch of fucking assholes. You know why? You don't have the guts to be what you want to be. You need people like me. You need people like me so you can point your fucking fingers and say, that's the bad guy.
Clearly, don't know who you're talking to, so let me clue you in. I am not in danger, Skyler. I am the danger. A guy opens his door and gets shot, and you think that of me? No. I am the one who knocks.
Everybody, to another episode of the Righteous Prick Podcast. I'm your host, J.L. Covan. It is 6:34 p.m. on the East Coast, Sunday, March 8th, in the year of our Lord, 2020. Some of you may be confused, because just yesterday, hello, Cookie, just yesterday, this would have been 5:35 p.m. enjoyed going to mass today, and just some family walked in with like 5 minutes to go in mass, and I just looked at them and I said, did you not get the memo? We're moving clocks ahead. Okay, see you next time, hopefully on time. And this has been my time. I'm J.L. Covan, and this is the Righteous Prick Podcast. Be good to yourselves and each other. Went to mass. Nobody shook hands, which I appreciate. I have a track on one of my many albums, on, I believe it's Israeli Tortoise, where I joke about people not shaking hands at church, and it's like, we just heard a story of our Lord and Savior washing the feet of a leper. That was not a cautionary tale. That was something to model ourselves after. That wasn't Jesus telling us to Purell more when you're around gross people. So on that album, I just made a point of that. So I've often been annoyed at the increasing trend of people just waving to each other, like you're standing next to somebody and they go, peace be with you, and they just wave. But the church bulletin today specifically said, let's have no contact, shall we? So I did more waving today. So that's your Catholic in New Jersey update from J.O. Covan. No DraftKings update this week, and I apologize. I know I owe my small but loyal fan base somewhere. I'm the Tulsi Gabbard of podcasting. I know I owe you guys my own personal self-destruction through gambling, and I promise to get back to that soon. But I got my tax refund, which is a fat check, and I immediately paid off a bill, and then spent a lot of money on a vacation to Florida. So that's where that money went. So I like to keep my account low if possible. So when the money starts flowing in, I can't keep it too low. I mean, talent, and smarts don't often end up super broke. But if I have something I want to buy or spend, like something I know I'm going to get eventually, I'll get it right away and pay off the bill right away so that I don't have like several thousand dollars in my account just waiting to be gangbanged by DraftKings. So I did that as a precautionary measure. So this is how I save. So no gambling right now. The payday is Friday, and March Madness is just around the corner. So I'm sure I'll have some sad tale of I was one win away from a $40,000 payday, and then some jerk on St. Louis University hit a meaningless three-pointer, and there went my nine-team parlay. I'm out $800, and I was a three-pointer away from 40 grand. So that's just a preview, I guess, but no actual DraftKings action this week. It was a busy week at work. That's right. Superman does have a day job. I go and I Clark Kent'd it up at a law firm, and it's so fun, and I had to work yesterday, and I had to work some today, though I worked from home. Not that I'm scared of coronavirus, but it's, let me put it this way. It's closer than I'd like it to be. So there's that. Not sure if I'll be working from home this week. I don't work as productively from home. I don't have the two monitor set up. That's when you know you're either a baller or a fucking gopher piece of shit at your office, when you got the two monitors, so it's easier to work from there. And secondly, I don't have five streaming services on a 65-inch TV right next to where I do work at home, where I can catch up on important programs and movies that I'm falling far behind in. Let me tell you something. I got a real newfound sympathy for my, and Cookie just got scared by a stationary bag of dog food. She is one dumb fucking dog. We love her, but she is dumb as fucking rocks. Hey, Cooks, you come over to share your stupidity with me? Thank you. I have a newfound respect for my friends who are always behind on shows and music and TV and working out and having a life. Because I got to tell you, full-time employment and a commute will really dry hump the shit out of your free time. Previously, I was working, you know, probably like a 75% schedule and living in Manhattan. So the gym was always there, and often I would forsake it for cookies. But the streaming content, I'm really falling behind. And I'm eliminating things that I'm just marginally interested. So I'm down to like a core of like 14 shows and movies that I actually very much want to see. And then there's the movies. I haven't been to the movie theater since December? Yeah, since December. Little Women was the last movie I saw in the theater. Way to go out on a low note. No, Little Women was fine, but I'm glad it didn't get any Oscars. Not because it didn't deserve them, but just because the people who get very upset about Little Women not winning Oscars are generally the type of people I want very upset. Greta Gerwig directed a movie and they didn't even nominate her. Instead, Todd Phillips, like MAGA bro, who made comedies that I haven't seen, apparently, he needed not. Yes, he did need a nomination. We've covered this on the podcast before. Anyway, but haven't been to a movie, and now I'm nervous with coronavirus. Do I really want to go to the movies? The one I want to see right now is Invisible Man. Bold choice, making Elizabeth Moss the star of the Ralph Ellison novel. But, you know, I'm with her and me too and all that. I guess we got to fucking do what we got to do and put women first, whatever. I'm surprised the African-American community has not spoken out on a white woman being the centerpiece of a film based on a sort of renowned African-American novel. But you know what? I'll let the full blacks and the full women, the cis women, let me be very careful there. I will let the 100% blacks and the cis women fight that out. But I never envisioned Invisible Man as a movie starring Elizabeth Moss, but it's gotten good reviews, so maybe they really handled it with care and with respect. But I think we can all agree that's a pretty bold choice. I mean, when they made a movie about Nina Simone and the light-skinned actress had to be darkened, that was a controversy that sunk the movie. So I don't know how Elizabeth Moss, starring in a book centered around a black man, has gotten away with it, but she's talented. She is talented, so good for her. But I do want to see that. I kind of want to see the Ben Affleck movie, though I'm a little disappointed. I think if they were going to make a movie about, a formerly good basketball player whose life has gone completely to shit, I would have preferred the path to shit being stand-up comedy and Entenmann's instead of alcohol, kind of a cliche. I feel like I would have felt seen and represented had The Way Back been about a guy who just ate and greyhounded his way to a mediocre life. But once again, my story is not important to Hollywood. Me being represented is not a priority for Hollywood. So I guess I'll just have to wait, in the words of Elizabeth Warren, another 4 years for those little girls. I like how Elizabeth Warren, when she backed out, said another 4 years. It was like, damn, so you don't even give Bernie or Biden a second term? Let's do some plugs real quick before we get to this week's topics, shall we? Let me bang out that DraftKings update. I felt like I needed to give you guys some DraftKings news, but there was no news. Thank you to all who watched and shared my video. And by that, I mean most of you I am not thanking, because as of this recording, I have more listeners per week. I have more downloads per week than I have views of the video, which is just another great lesson that nothing I or many comedians do or share has any value whatsoever to even the people who choose to make it a part of their weekly life, which is one of the more bizarre things that I can't figure out about the 21st century and content consumption. Now, it's one thing to be like, you listen to my podcast for 5 years? Well, guess what? I have a $5 album coming out next week. Boo! I didn't realize we were going to have to pay for this shit. 5 years of free content, and now you expect us to buy something just because we're fans of yours and have been drowning in free content? No, thank you, sir. And it's like, okay, I'll meet you halfway. More content, free though, still. So you have to go to a different website, but it's free. Can you make that journey with me? Can we go arm in arm across this Edmund Pettus bridge of comedy content and forge a new future? And the answer from my own fan base was a resounding fuck off. And then Jean-Louis got hit on that bridge the same way a John Lewis got hit many years ago. See how I brought that all together? Because my name is Jean-Louis, which translates to John Lewis. Or if you're a Latina nurse calling in patients, Jean Lewis? Yep, I've been here 8 times, but thank you for... Where are you from? Dominican Republic. Okay, Haiti is right next door. We share the island, and you can't pronounce a French name correctly? God damn it! I really do feel like it's spite whenever I get a Dominican nurse. I had a Puerto Rican woman. I think she was Puerto Rican. You can always get tripped up on that, but I'm pretty sure she was Puerto Rican. But I went to a Wendy's a while back, last 6 months. And let's say it was 6 months. It might have been 4, okay? Full disclosure, it might have been 4 months, not 6. I don't want anybody bringing the receipts. And my order came up, and she said, Jean? And I went, whoa. And I didn't get there fast enough. And then she went, Jean? And I said, no. No, you had it right the first time. Don't you ever forget that you had it right the first time. I don't want you to see that name and automatically think Jean. I want you to think Jean, like Wyclef and Luc Picard and Claude Van Damme. And she got it right. And I felt really good about Wendy's that day. Didn't hurt that she wasn't a bad-looking chick either, but that's besides the point. But every time I go to a goddamn doctor's office with a Dominican, like, attendee, nurse, assistant, Jean Lewis, I went to a doctor one time over the course of, 5 years, probably 7 times. Never got it right. And I just think that was spiteful, because if any country besides Haiti and France should get French and Canada and every other country that speaks French, if any other the non-speaking French country that should have the most familiarity with French names, it's the Dominican Republic. So I think it was intentional spite that she was messing it up. Jean Lewis, No. That's what I did. That's what I said to her. No, I didn't. I didn't. I just, at some point, I just stopped. I just would walk without saying, I would just be like, I'm not officially, I don't want to be on the record as officially recognizing this as my name, but I will walk to the office that you point me to right now. God damn it. Anyway, I'm reliving some trauma over having my name. That's why I go by JL. And I think I've made this joke before, but it makes me feel like one of those Indian dudes whose name is like Drivet, like, you know, nine consonants with a couple of vowels, very difficult. And we as an American population just sort of say, yeah, that's not going to work. And then a lot of those guys just change their name, like for, you know, they don't literally change it, but they just go by like, yeah, call me Dave. I'm like, God damn it. And now I feel that pain. And I feel like a sellout at 40 years old to have been going by JL for more than half my life. When my name is Jean-Louis, and to quote Marlo Stanfield, my name is my name. But Gene Louis it is. I guess I'll just go. Maybe I'll do the Louis C.K. thing. He seems pretty successful. Maybe what if I change my name to G-E-N-E, like it's short for Eugene, and then L-E-W-I-S. You know, I'll probably get some nurse going, is Jeanette Lewis here? I'll be like, you motherfucker. Oh, it doesn't matter. Early in the morning, late at night, Sunday evening before 60 Minutes, I eventually lose my mind while doing this podcast. But thank you to anybody who did watch it, who did share it, which was very few of you. But it's a super funny video. The link is literally in the comments of last week's episode. It's the homepage video on my website, jlcomedy.com. It's right there. You scroll down about 1 to 2 inches and you'll find the fucking video. It's the home video on my YouTube, youtube.com/jlcauvin. So I applaud you if you're not watching it, because basically if you're listening to this, you've stumbled into my content somewhere, and right next to it is that video. So congratulations to you for being, for some reason, a super stubborn fan of mine who refuses to support most of what I do. But give that a look, give that a share, give it a like, blah, blah, blah. Speaking of other things that are free that you can support, Making Podcasts Great Again, my Trump podcast in its final year, win or lose. We're killing it right now. So, yeah, check it out. It's a fun listen. And not every one of our listeners is a pure Trump hater. Some Trump fans still find it funny. So if you're still on the fence, or you pride yourself in being nonpartisan, it's still a fun listen, from what I've been told. It's torture to make, but it's fun to listen to. No, it's not torture. I mean, you know, life is torture, but, you know, whatever. And then, request for money thing coming up. Evacuate. My new album is coming out a month from the day as I'm, it's March 8th right now as I speak, on April 8th, 2020. Fireside Craps, the deuce, drops. We're dropping it. We're hoping you pick it up, digitally or physically. No, there's going to be no physical copies. I've learned my lesson 7 albums in. I finally realized that people don't want albums. No, that's not true. I sold a shit ton, but, you know, they sell slower and slower physical copies. So we're going all digital on this one. Yeah, so mark your calendar. Hopefully you can support it. It is phenomenally funny, well produced by Aaron Hodges of You Lucky Dog Productions. So, yeah, that's it. There's the pitches, folks. Oh, boy, what do we do? What do we do? Big news, obviously, on the political front. It's a 2-man race between Joe Biden and Bernard Sanders. All due respect to Tulsi Gabbard, but can somebody just do a porn parody of her as soon as possible so we can get her out of this fucking race? And the Tulsi, what's her squad called? Like, her fan base is like 85% men. It's like, it's so gross. what's a good name for the Gabboys? I don't know. They're fucking lame. All due respect to a friend who did support her. I hope he's not still supporting her. But a friend of the show, in fact, was a Tulsi fan. He liked the non-interventionist wing of the Democratic Party. And I guess there should be a voice for that, of course. But not for a woman who's auditioning for Fox News, clearly. But I got to say, Elizabeth Warren, everybody I've supported has dropped out. So now I finally gave money to Joe Biden. So his days should be numbered because the JL jinx of campaign contributions, to quote LeVar Ball, never lost. And so Biden right now is the only one still standing. But I only gave to him this week. So it certainly he certainly has time to falter, and the JL jinx is potent. But I liked watching Elizabeth Warren on SNL. I thought she was actually very natural and pretty funny. Like, she didn't seem stiff. I guess that's what you also get from your rehearsing speeches and addressing crowds for, you know, multiple crowds every day when you're running for president. And she's obviously a smart woman. But I really liked her on SNL. And I thought to myself, you know what, Liz, if I can call you Liz, you should have gone on SNL sooner, because you may not know this about J.L. Covan, but he's a real sucker for comedy. And if you're funny, he'll forgive a lot. Or at least he'll rationalize some of your worst qualities. So I hate to be one of these common folk. But yeah, I guess had she done SNL sooner, I probably would have voted for her or supported her. So her mistake. And then we got Bernie. We got Bernie Sanders. I saw some, it is funny, the comedy world, and I always bring this back to the Mike Payne quote, who may or may not be the Tulsi Gabbard supporter I was referencing. I always bring it back to the Mike Payne, a.k.a. Kanye West quote. Comedians, it's kind of, I can't quite do his voice. I can capture the spirit, but basically comedians... are like Karl Marx when it comes to comedy. I mean, when it comes to the rest of the world, but they're basically Paul Ryan when it comes to comedy. And that's the truth. The amount of comedians I see going, supporting Bernie, and I go, you motherfuckers have never taken one fucking professional risk in your fucking lives. None. You've never been a vocal supporter of anything important. You've never challenged the powers that be. It's just this group of whatever. Lemmings the ones that just fucking follow everything? But it's like stunning. You and I'm not saying they're wrong. I think Bernie's platform, it's the reason I gave him money. I gave Bernie Sanders money before I gave Hillary Clinton money in 2016. And they both lost. So once again, that should tell you about the JL jinx. But because I liked his message, I'd been reading a lot in 2015 about income inequality. And when he came out as that being just sort of the driving force of his campaign and his message, I was like, I want that message in the race. I'm probably going to vote for Hillary Clinton, but I feel like that message can push the party in a different direction and address some of the things that really need to be addressed. But I'm also obviously a very outspoken person, as loud as my platform is able, which isn't super loud. Thank you, Twitter and Facebook algorithms. But I talk about pay in comedy. I talk about a lot of the bullshit in comedy. I obviously, quote unquote, attacked Louis C.K., not for his sexual proclivities, but just because I thought he was an overrated stand-up comedian, which was divisive for a lot of people. A lot of people thought it was very funny. Now he's a very popular person to shit on, unless you're a vulgar bro who believes anybody ever thinking anything bad about a stand-up comedian is offensive and against your poor understanding of the Constitution. But I find it very hypocritical that people who want comedians to get paid more are sort of like rocking the boat, or people who criticize other comedians. I'm not talking about their comedy, but like become sort of pariahs. Like, in other words, it's you're just supposed to admire those who've made it, respect those who are on their way to making it, and shut the fuck up and pray that you get to be one of those lucky people one day and not rock the boat and not challenge anything and not question anything. And yet these same people in comedy are the ones who believe that every other business and every other successful person outside of the stand-up comedy world should pay more in taxes, should give more to those who have less. Once again, I'm not disagreeing with that. I just cannot and will not take a single fucking moral lesson or cue from the pathetic mass of cowardice that is the stand-up comedy community. You know, and then the flip side of that is, you know, I laugh. I'm when I'm done with my scripts, my pilot is done. When I'm done writing the kind of that my 2020 project was to write a 6-episode first season of a series, but starting in April, I'm going to try and probably fail to shop the pilot. But after that is a book, and either it'll be nonfiction or it'll be fiction, but it will center somewhat on comedy, not entirely, but comedy. As a sort of clear, in my mind, a great representation of the age that we're living in. Because once again, every week there's more. The two people who love critiquing the industry outside of me, the two groups of people in comedy, there's only two. There's those who are the equivalent of millionaires who are very upset that they're not billionaires and claim that the industry is not is against them. You know what I mean? Like the people who've achieved 5 of the 6 infinity stones of stand-up comedy success, but don't yet have a successful sitcom in syndication. They then consider themselves victims of the system, even though it's like, well, your televised specials, your 10 late night spots, your headlining across the country. But no, that's, you're not okay. So it's not going well because your third special didn't get purchased or your pilot got passed on. And all you have left to fall back on is 40 weeks of headline work, thousands of dollars in streaming royalties every month, and high level representation and management and work in New York City every night. So like I see, you know, and that reminds me of the billionaires who were like bitching about how horrible life would be under Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren. And I believe it was Elizabeth Warren who had said, you'll still be a billionaire. You just won't be as rich. And that's not good enough for a lot of people who really game, whose lives become not about the numbers or happiness, but about getting to the next stop, getting to the next station. And that's something I can appreciate. But I can't appreciate the sort of monumental hypocrisy or like just shamelessness. So yeah, there's your stand-up comedy. You have the billionaires, and then you have everybody at the bottom, but who seems to think that comedy's working just fine. It's every other business and industry with massive inequality that needs to change. And obviously comedy is an art, but it's not like certain arts haven't figured out a way to be more equitable. And once again, I'm not saying that every open micer deserves a home and a hot meal, but I'm saying when you're working the road and the wages are still the same after 40 years, something is probably amiss. And that's why you have to go work at a law firm full time and basically watch your comedy career die a slow death. I don't know who I'm talking about, but that rings true. But I don't know. I do feel for Bernie's people, though. I feel like Bernie is a more honest broker than maybe a lot of his followers. But I'm voting for Biden if it matters in Jersey. If Biden has it wrapped up by the time the New Jersey primary is in fucking June, Jesus, I will write in Jay Inslee. But if the primary is still contested, I will vote for Joseph Biden Jr. I think he's a junior. They keep saying Joe Biden Jr. Yeah, he's a junior. But we'll see. But I'm glad I managed to get mad at the comedy world again. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Yes, and I said there, the two guys, there's the millionaires who aren't billionaires and are upset. And then there's the dudes who almost became millionaires and then become ardently hostile to the business. Those are also my favorite. The guys who never stopped espousing the you gotta grind, you gotta work, you gotta do your thing. You'll rise to the top. That's what they say when they've got management and maybe like a TV deal or like their shit is kind of hot for the moment. And then when they don't break to that next level, the millionaires, and I'm saying millionaires, you know, relatively speaking, but when they don't break into that next tier, that tier where you're one more tier away from superstardom, but now you're kind of a stand-up star, even if you're not a household name, you're getting steady credits and work. When they don't break from that on the cusp level to the millionaire status, not the billionaire, but the millionaire, then they become really bitter. Like my thing is, I've been bitter since like 2010. I remember writing things when I remember outside of Caroline's Comedy Club. They were having their New York Funniest auditions, which are bullshit. They have every, much like Last Comic Standing, they would have hundreds of comics line up for like 3-minute auditions. And then they would pick up like 40. And then you would come back that night with a chance to get to like the final 10, which would be a big show. And then the winner gets like a TV spot and like a work at Caroline's for a week. And it was always somebody already, like it would be like Julian McCullough, Mike Vecchione, Dan Soder, or something like that. It would always be people who are already kind of on the cusp and nobody could doubt it. It wasn't like they weren't funny. It was always like, oh, yeah, of course, that guy's funny. But it was also, you could bet, you could take odds on who the guy was that year and they would win the contest. And it was always very clear almost. But I remember waiting on that line. And I had done a little bit of work at Caroline's. I'd gotten a few spots at Caroline's. And somebody had come up to me and said, either a comic or somebody at the club or both, like, oh, you're here. You don't have to wait online. And I had waited the whole, I was at the front of the line by that point. So I was glad I didn't have to, decide whether I would stay online in principle or go in. I'd already waited my like fucking 3.5 hours or something, or when, a couple hours. And I go down, and because they knew me, I didn't even have to audition. They were just like, oh yeah, you know, we'll contact you. Now they never did contact me. So I was probably in there. Well, we have our top 40. Oop, JL is like our 45th guy. So some of these people will not audition and we will not call them in. But it was a big, big joke. It was just a big fucking joke. And I always thought that was, I remember writing about that in 2010 or 2011. And that was really where it began. It wasn't about me. I wasn't mad that I didn't get picked. I was mad that the entire structure was a lie. Like, in other words, other comedians were props for the comedians they were already going to select, which is just like Last Comic Standing. But the difference, what made me so angry about it, was Last Comic Standing is a TV show. It's NBC. Like, you can't, that's too big a product to like trust like you know it. But when a comedy club in your city is using comics as props to sort of legitimize the meritocracy, the appearance of meritocracy, that's disgusting. And that's what the business has been to me ever since. So I was, like I said, I was still on the rise. Things were happening for me. I was still a couple of years away from viral videos and Adam Carolla and ESPN Radio and all that stuff. And let's not forget my star-making turn on Comics Unleashed with Byron Allen. So, JL, you like to breathe, huh? I do, Byron. Thanks for bringing that up, because that reminds me of the time that I woke up and did this. But I wasn't... I just wasn't afraid. Like, I got into comedy. My reasons for getting into comedy were I like to make people laugh. It's a great stress release for me. And I thought, and I wanted to do something solitary. I don't mean like not talk to people, but I mean, I like the fact that you live and die on your own as a stand-up comedian, at least the art part of it, the onstage part of it. And so I never conducted myself, and maybe to my detriment, but never in a way that was like worried about how something would play, or, oh, you shouldn't say that about them. I'm not talking about like being mean or talking shit, but I'm saying if something is bad or wrong, like, I didn't get into this as a business. I'd like to, I believe I'm good enough that I should be making a living at it. But I didn't get into it. Like, I didn't go to comedy school and then say, well, like the way I'm a lawyer, that's what the fuck that is. That the lawyer pays the bills. I don't enjoy it, but I go, I went to law school. I'm qualified and able to work this job and get paid this much money. So that's what I'll do. Comedy. So yeah, like if my firm, the job is different. It's comedy was not a job. It's a passion that I wanted to make a job, but the job part never superseded the value of the passion part. So why would I, and I've always not liked that other people, maybe not as many people take it this way, but why wouldn't I say something if a club is being scummy? Like, why wouldn't I express myself comedically or otherwise, like about different things in comedy or outside of comedy, and just use my, like, but that seems to not be, it seems to be only when backed up by enough people or representation do people speak their minds. And it's usually the people speaking their minds are like, oh my God, Netflix didn't buy my special, or, oh, my agent dropped me after 7 years. This business is a fucking joke. And it's like, was it a joke for those 7 years? Was it a joke when you did like two Comedy Central specials, or did it only become a joke, or did you only become a rebel when your 19th thing failed? And to me, that's a whole litany of things of why stand-up comedy is a fucking joke business. And it's, I've already described what I think of the general character of the collection. Obviously, there's plenty of exceptions, but they don't drive, the exceptions hardly drive the narrative or the business. So I'll be voting for Joe Biden. That's a good one. I did notice something, though. I went to IHOP last night for dinner. So that's today. I finished. Girlfriend was in the city with some friends. And I was working from home. And I put in a long day of work. And I said, you know what? I'm going to IHOP. I'm going to treat myself to some nice fluffy pancakes for dinner. Love pancakes for dinner. So I went. And the only other times I've gone to IHOP while living here, since living here, have been on Sunday nights. And it's the it's often the same crew. These like sort of young, let's just say white trash adjacent, but very nice waitresses. That sounds mean because they're nice. They're nice. But I mean, if you just saw them, I don't mean to profile, but if you saw them, you'd be like, okay, where are we? Florida. But they're very nice. And I sound very much like Trump, right? That's the waitresses are not our best people. Okay. They are not elite Florida types. They're more of your Florida project. You know, we're not talking about housing projects with the black. I'm talking about that movie with the, like, the white trash white with the tattoos who's playing the trap music for her daughter in the bathtub. Anyway, good movie. You should see it. They're not our best people, but they're nice. They're trying. They're nice. That was a very Trumpian way of describing these women. But I noticed, and then there's like this smoothie shop next to my building that I've been to on like a, this week. I went on a, like a Thursday. I went Saturday for lunch, and then I went today. And it was the same group of women. And I just, and they're young women. But I'm not talking like 18. I'm talking like early 20s. And it made me sort of take stock of maybe how easy my life has been. Mostly not of my doing. Because I was just like, damn, like, you're like 23. And like your Friday, Saturday, Sunday nights are like, where, and hey, if you got responsibilities, that's great. But like, and you're an adult. So sometimes adults have to do shit. But I was like, well, shit, I was in fucking school at 23, 24, law school. And I was just, I don't know, it made me realize, like, not to sound like paternalistic or whatever, but I was like, God damn, that sucks to be working, like, as a young person, like, the prime nights, and maybe it makes you, helps you save money. But I was just like, it made me think, I was like, maybe I should have supported Bernie Sanders so these young ladies could go out and get drunk and and fuck on a Friday and Saturday instead of serving me pancakes. Isn't that what Bernie's really all about? So that's my way of saying I'm supporting Bernie Sanders after Joe Biden and Jay Inslee. So I don't know why I brought that up, but it was just sometimes I get in these moods when I'm walking around. I don't know. My life has been pretty, I mean, I complain a lot on this fucking podcast, but whatever. But truth be told, I've had a very good life. Because basically maybe my mom was one of those young, maybe that's why I feel sympathy, because my mom went to work right after high school and she ended up making really good money and busting her ass for her two kids. So that I can live like a hoity-toity middle-class life instead of like a struggling middle-class life. But I don't know. It's like I'm having my own shrink session right now. But maybe that's why I just felt sympathy for these like young women working on like fun nights where I was like, shit, man. And then I just discovered that now. I think I just see versions of my mom in these people just grinding it out. And it's, but that's, I don't know. Maybe they don't need sympathy, but I don't know why that made me think. Like, I'm a fucking loser eating pancakes on like a Saturday night. Just like, I just finished work from home and now I'm going to eat some pancakes for dinner. Like the baller that I am. And then I'm going to go home and watch the first hour of Alita Battle Angel before I turn it off and in disgust. I don't know. I know sometimes women don't want to hear this, but I always, and I don't know, maybe it was just because I saw my mom as frustrated my whole life, but I don't know. Whenever I just, sometimes you see young women who are like making ends meet, and obviously, or you'll see a young man making ends meet, but I guess my sympathies are always like, this world sucks for poor people, and however much it sucks for poor people, it's got to really suck for poor women. And I don't know, that always, I don't know why, like, maybe it's just I can't be happy. Maybe I go and I'm like, ooh, pancakes, and then I'm like, I'm too happy with these pancakes. Is there something around here that I can overanalyze and become depressed about? And I'm like, look at these young women Saturday night serving up pancakes to fucking families and giant out of shape lawyers. What kind of life is this? But yeah, so hopefully Bernie Sanders gets them all health care and higher wages, and we'll see. Right? That's a depressing way to end the show. I shouldn't end it that way, but I have nothing. Well, I do have a rant that I wanted to do on manners, but we can save that for another time, I think, because I don't know. Because whatever, because I said so. I will say this, though. The girl at the smoothie shop, I was less sympathetic to. The women at the IHOP, they're always very friendly. And I always think to myself, I'm like, why are you so friendly? Now, I mean, it's pleasant, but I'm like, I project myself and go, I'd be much more surly. So I tip nicely at IHOP. You know, if my bill's like 12 bucks, I drop a 5. Maybe that's why they're nice. Maybe they aren't even nice people. They go, here comes that idiot who tips 39% on pancakes. But the smoothie chick, not so friendly. I feel like I have some sympathy, but not as much. Like, she's seen me 3 times this week. I'm fucking 6'7". Everybody else in that shop is like some chick walking with their yoga mat. So I roll in there, and it's like, nary a look of recognition. Not once has she looked at me like, hey, how you doing? She's just like, mm-hmm. And I'm like, you know what? I'm glad you have to work these fucking nights. I'm done with my sympathy for you. All my sympathy and my tips go to IHOP waitresses, not to you, Missy. Good. So that was good. We worked out some more issues for me tonight. So this will go up early because it's another busy week at work, dodging coronavirus and trying to help big companies make money or not spend as much money in litigation. So that's really doing the Lord's work, isn't it? That's where a struggling stand-up comedy career will drive you. Instead of becoming a hypocrite about my art, like so many of these headliners and quasi-headliners, instead, I become a hypocrite in other aspects of my life. So that's it. Righteous Girlfriend's coming home soon to make me some salmon and some sweet potatoes and some broccoli. So I guess that's all right. But I don't feel sympathy for her because she's got me and I got mad loot. No, I feel sympathy for my girlfriend because she's got to put up with me. That's got to suck. Like, I feel like 20% of the time, that's just got to be an awful fucking experience. And that's before we even get into the physical violence. But anyway, did I say that out loud? No, never physical violence. The only time I've made girlfriends cry when they didn't deserve it was when it's happened 4 times. I'm really only count. Well, okay. I cheated on my college girlfriend, so those were definitely warranted tears. So, okay, we're going to discount that, though. Anything, as the rule goes, anything before the age of 22 is not eligible for this podcast list. The only times I've really made girlfriends cry when they didn't deserve it was when I would hurl remote controls at the wall in my old apartment. Because Time Warner has horrible remote controls. And it was literally not anger at anyone except the remote control. It was like we're having a pleasant conversation and the channel won't change and the volume won't change. And it's the third Time Warner, now known as Spectrum, the cable company artists formerly known as Spectrum, known as Time Warner. And then I would get frustrated and I would hurl it against the wall and I broke multiple remotes that way. And I remember two different girlfriends crying because you sort of lose sight of the fact that as a 6'7" man fluctuating between 250 and 300 pounds, you are scary when mad, even if you are not mad at anyone other than Time Warner / Spectrum Cable. So you got to keep the temper in check to all my big listeners. There was a great thing I posted to Twitter from the marvelous Miss Maisel, where Zach Levy, who I guess is like a 6'3" actor, which in Hollywood is like, you know, fucking George Murison. And look it up. He was 7'7". And he was just going, but I can't get mad. I can't get mad because I'm very tall. I'm very, very tall. You can't get mad because if you get mad, it scares people. And then like some woman, he goes, look, she's scared. Look, because when you get mad and you're tall, you look like an angry building. And I guess that's what it sort of looks like when I get mad. So I try not to get mad. You won't like me when I'm angry. Apparently you don't like me when I'm not angry because nobody's watching my YouTube videos. But I had another thing that had just popped into my head, and I'll remember it when I stop this and then probably lose my temper. But as long as I compose myself before the righteous girlfriend gets home. I know. I hope you all understand this is all for laughs and completely true. No, I once got kicked. Here's another example. See, my temper, it's not even, I don't get aggressive with people generally. I try not to. I'm a man of peace, like pit bulls and the Islamic faith. I am a man of peace, and I remember though my brother used to play when he was still living in Washington D.C. He would play basketball a lot of Sundays or Saturdays. I forget which day. Probably Sunday, and. It was like big time journalists like New York Times, Washington Post. Like I read the works of the people I used to play basketball with, and they weren't like that good, but I was like already kind of like out of basketball skills. So I was just basically a little more athletic and, you know, had more basketball sense, but like, you know, probably shot 20% from the field. And I remember one time one of the reporters, their son was there like 10 years old, and I had missed like a follow up. You know, and there's nothing more frustrating to a basketball player. It's not missing a 3-pointer that will get you mad. It's when you lose your touch And there are things that come, like, with any activity, if you do it every day for years and years, that are, like, instinct. And, like, touch around the basket was, like, I feel like left me before my jump shot left me. Because it was just, like, the feel, like, boop, boop, put that back in, like, it's nothing, like, I'm breathing. And I missed, like, a putback, and it was probably my second missed putback of the day. And you got to remember, 6'7", 270 at this time, running down court. And I just went, fuck! And of course, I'm only mad at myself, but I'm also approximately 8 feet from the 10-year-old or 11-year-old son of one of the reporters. Now, I'm not directing at him, but it was simply the presence of this giant man looking like he wanted to murder something, even if it was only himself. And man, oh man, I got an email from my brother that I was basically banned from the journalist game, which I was only there like every like 6 weeks to visit my brother and his family. I wasn't living in D.C. At the time. I was back in New York. And I just remember writing to my brother. I was like, totally understand. And I said, I am not appealing the ban. I just hope they know that I was not direct. I never directed my temper at anyone other than myself. But yes, it was not in keeping with the tone. 55-year-old Pulitzer Prize winners don't want a 34-year-old bitter ex-athlete cursing at their game. So, yeah, that was when I started to learn the lesson of, even if I'm not getting mad at people, sometimes you just got to keep your temper in check, because you look scarier losing your temper than other people. So there's that. And Ron Reagan, not afraid of going to hell. I wrote down I was going to have Stephen A. Smith break down Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders, but I don't feel like doing that right now, guys. We just had a psych session instead of a podcast. So hopefully some of that made you laugh. Some of it made you cry. Tip your IHOP waitresses, especially if they're there regularly on Friday. And that was the thing. I actually went. This is how allergic to happiness I am. I'm going to IHOP. And by the way, spoiler, I also had a chocolate milkshake, because if you're going to go all in, go all in. And those, goddamn, it was so good. It was so delicious. But as I'm going, since I usually go on Sundays, I go, oh, I hope those young waitresses are like a Sunday to Thursday crew, but that they get their fun days off, because they're too young. They're too young to be waitressing and serving pancakes at night on Fridays and Saturdays. And who knows what kind of fucking creeps roll in. And then they were both there on Saturday. And I said, damn, that means they're working both weekend days. And I was like, man, that's too bad. But you know what? Maybe they look at it as, hey, fuck it. I'm happy to just have a job, or this is a second job or whatever. But my point being, if you're working IHOP every weekend, you're hustling. And I respect it. And that's why I tip well. So especially tip your IHOP waitresses well, but especially if they're working the odd shift. Because obviously, if you're working like fucking Sunday brunch at IHOP, you're fucking rolling to work in a sports car. You're balling. No. But if you're working that like 4 tables out of 12 or full on a Friday night or a Saturday night, tip them extra. But most of you are going, JL, turns out I'm not a fucking loser, quasi-depressed dude with remote control and Pulitzer Prize-winning basketball anger issues. So I don't find myself in an IHOP on a Saturday night. Well, good for you, okay? If you're that much of a baller, then you can buy Fireside Craps 2 on April 8th, 2020. Did you see how we brought it back? Did you see that? So, anyway, when you're talking about a candidate like Bernard Sanders and them Bernie boy bros, let's see. I guess that's it, guys. I think that's it. Try to think of a title. I think ending with the temper tantrum with the Pulitzer Prize winners was good. Oh, and then the epilogue to that story, though, is like 2 years later. I'm opening for Dave Attell, at the Washington, D.C. Improv, crushing it. And then one of the journalists who happened to have won a Pulitzer Prize for, I believe it was the exposing the NSA wiretap program. He comes up to me. He's like, hey, it's Bob, Bob, Bob. You're Henri's brother. I was like, of course I remember you. I was banned from your games. And we had a good laugh. So there. See, it all ended happily. Okay? So to the two women who've cried when I've hurled remote controls and screamed fuck in my apartment because I hate my cable company, it gets better. Hashtag it gets better. So this has been quite the journey. JL was a little too paternalistic when it comes to those young women at the IHOP. I think he needs to realize that they're more empowered. Although, to be honest, I did have a thought. Like, my waitress was kind of tatted up, and I thought, I gotta tell you, I respect your hustle being at IHOP on a Saturday night, slinging these cakes. Probably could have saved a buck or two on the ink. That's just my thought, you know. But tattoos are like health insurance now. Like, I think if you're under 35, you have to have a tattoo. Like, what are you doing without a tattoo? So on that note, I have no tattoos because I want to be buried in a Jewish cemetery, just to throw people off. I guess that's it, guys. I've said that probably four times. So thank you for listening. This was, as always, a very weird episode. Sunday night seems to bring out the real weirdness in me. Sunday night used to be times when I was a child when my mom would lose her temper, and now I lose my mind, and it really is coming full circle. It's a circle of life based on irrational losing of temper. That is my family story, and I would like to see more representation of it on screen in the form of Ben Affleck eating cookies and doing comedy. That's who I've decided. My biopic, I've already decided. We've narrowed it down to three people. Bobby Cannavale. And people, what will be funny is, like, when people read the story and they're like, well, JL was half black, but they got a half Latin, half Italian to play him. Cancel this movie. And then I'll have to make media appearances going, no, I wrote the script and I specifically asked for Bobby Cannavale because, just like Bobby Cannavale, no one thinks I'm half black. So there's Bobby Cannavale. There's, I think his name, is it Roger Guinevere Smith? The guy who's always in Spike Lee movies as like his lightest skinned black dude. And what's the other one? Whatever. This podcast is fizzling out. Thank you for listening, guys. Go watch the video. Give this one 5 stars, even if you don't think it deserves it. I've gotten some nice reviews recently, so let's keep those coming. Check out Making Podcasts Great Again. And once again, put in your calendar, into your phone, wherever you keep dates. Fireside Craps 2, April 8th, 2020. So thank you for listening, and I will see you next Tuesday.